Dr. Maya Chitreet, I am so excited to have you on this episode of Regenerative Medicine Summit. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, for all the viewers, I want to make sure that they know how incredible you are. And I've had the opportunity myself to enjoy some of your ceremonies, which are really, really powerful. So I highly suggest everyone, you know, to really check out what Dr. Chitreet is doing. You started as a neurologist. You're now working also as an herbalist, urban farmer, and you're author of The Dirt Cure, which has been translated into 10 languages. So it's spreading. Dirt is spreading around the world. So that's awesome. She's been featured in the New York Times, The Telegraph, NPR, Sky News, The Dr. Oz Show, and more. Dr. Maya is the founder of the Terrain Institute, where she teaches earth-based programs for transformational healing, including professional training programs for psychedelic-assisted approaches. She works and studies with indigenous communities and healers from around the world and is a lifelong student of ethnobotany, plant healing, and the sacred. Well, we're going to be talking about some really cool stuff today.
Well, I threw in some tongue twisters there for you, so I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. Usually I'm not this bad. It's just that it's been a lot going on in the morning, and then all of a sudden you don't read well.
It wasn't bad at all. It wasn't bad at all.
or like they say, like Zoolander say, you know, children that don't read good, you know. So I still think that's a classic. My wife will disagree. She still thinks, yeah, Gone with the Wind is a classic, and she's right. But anyway, us dudes, we got to hold on to those movies. So tell me a little bit. I mean, botany, plants, they in themselves have an energy to themselves, have a spirit to themselves. That we really can benefit. It's almost like, you know, a lot of indigenous people, they look upon them as almost like plant people. So tell me a little bit about that and the energy that they carry for us that we can benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the most exciting things about this reemergence of psychedelic medicines, and, you know, that's sort of the more technical term that's being used in the medical and mainstream establishment, but, you know, I call them master plants or teacher plants because of how I learned and kind of became acquainted with these plants. And what's exciting about it is that, yes, absolutely, in indigenous communities, these plants are considered to be teachers that carry wisdom, ancient wisdom, and they're considered to be, in fact, much older and wiser than we young humans are. And so for indigenous communities, the physical benefits or the physical impacts of these plants are not the primary impact, right? It's actually expanding the conversation, even in mainstream medicine right now, in mainstream Western medicine, because, you know, it's not just physical, it's not just mental, but it's also emotional and spiritual. And this spiritual connection, so the way that I learned it, the paradigm into which I was initiated, says that actually physical illness is downstream of spiritual well-being. And what gives you spiritual well-being is to be in right relationship with yourself, with those around you, with the land that you stand on, and with the invisible world, right? Your ancestors and the plants and, you know, the wind and the water and the, right? So all of these elements, being in relationship and in alignment with those, is what dictates all of the other stuff that we think is primary in conventional medicine and even in integrative medicine, right? It's like the physical, the mental, even the emotional, all of that is of course incredibly important. But the question is, where do you start, right? When we think root cause, we're like excited in integrative medicine to be talking about diet and exercise, and all of those things are tremendously important because, you know, in this paradigm, our body is this incredibly sacred container holding our spirit, right? And so we want to treat it as an altar, right? As a sacred space. So none of those things are discounted, but simply starting with the relationship, in this case, between you and this teacher plant together, right? Cultivating an intimacy, which, as we'll discuss, does not even mean always ingesting and having big giant experiences. We can, you know, talk about that more, but simply cultivating intimacy and relationship and coming with reverence and humility to these plants, they will, in this paradigm, bestow on you their wisdom as to how to live in right relationship and have a life of meaning and joy.
So it's almost then that when you're ingesting them, or even if you're not ingesting them, you're just kind of in their presence, you know, because they have a certain energy about them, that they will then shift how we vibrate, I mean, kind of the energy aspect of ourselves. And obviously that will then shift how we relate to the rest of the world and how we view the rest of the world, which will then translate into the physical appearance, so to say. I mean, what we manifest in the world, and obviously health, disease is part of that, but it's so much more.
Well, yeah. So let me give you a few examples. And if you'll forgive me, I might like nerd out a little on the science.
I love it.
For a moment here, because I sort of like having my foot in both worlds, or many worlds, as we might say. But, you know, so first I'll just talk about it from the standpoint of mitochondria. Okay. So mitochondria to me are incredibly spiritual organelles in the cell because, first of all, most people probably know this, but mitochondria are not actually of human or even eukaryotic origin. They're actually bacterial in origin. I think that's pretty well accepted now. At the time that it was first spoken about by Lynn Margulies, it was considered to be incredibly controversial, but it actually evolved from spirochetes, like the same bacteria that are involved in Lyme and, you know, I mean, syphilis and right. But they partnered, they were in relationship with the eukaryotic cells that together they found that collaborating, they were able to, you know, become responsible for the evolution of these incredibly complex creatures that we are. So mitochondria are already very cool. And in fact, part of how all the bacteria in our microbiome in our bodies are so potent and have so much impact is that they communicate with our mitochondria directly through something called quorum sensing. And quorum sensing is the way bacteria talk to one another. So mitochondria are like, oh yeah, I know that language. I can talk human, you know, human and cell language, but I can also talk bacteria language. And so there's these conversations. And I personally find that to be very spiritual and beautiful energetically, because it's like so much around what is happening in relationship, right? But then what we're finding is that, let's say, for example, ayahuasca is a particular plant medicine, a psychedelic plant medicine. And one of the things that they've found when they've studied the science of what ayahuasca is doing is that DMT, one of the components of this ayahuasca brew, okay, that people drink, DMT is an indirect antioxidant that impacts chaperone proteins, which I'm not going to get into all the like deep, deep nerdiness, but part of what they are doing is in fact protecting the mitochondria and helping to prevent cell death and protect the cell. It's just, it's so beautiful and profound. Like what we're finding is that on literally a molecular level, and I even love that it's impacting chaperone proteins. Like, again, it just sounds like, okay, this is like the companionship, right? It's all about relationship and companionship. And so what we're seeing on literally a physiologic level is that these medicines are affecting us at our energy centers, our mitochondria, right? And that is very much about you know, mitochondria are these incredible beings, really, that are constantly, they're sentinels, they're constantly sampling the environment. And yes, you know, emitting frequencies that determine our frequency, right? So that's the first way I would think about it, that I think on a very energetic level, these plant medicines work, and it's completely scientific and also completely energetic. The other way that I think, to your point of it changes how we see the world, I'm going to talk about it on a psychological level and a neurological level. So what these medicines do is they actually shut down a system, okay, a network in our nervous system. And it's called the default mode network. And part of what this network is responsible for doing is kind of ego, right? Like, who am I? And so they call it the me network. And it's all different parts of the brain that are communicating with one another. And what this network does, one of the things that this network does, is it actually controls something called predictive coding. And predictive coding basically describes what happens when you walk into any situation. You walk into a new situation, you think, oh, I'm picking out all of the different details of this new environment, and I'm piecing it together, and I know everything that's happening here. But that's actually not what our brains do at all. Our nervous system, when we come into any new room, new situation, anything, we pick out a few details of what's happening right then and there, and we fill in all of the rest of the details with what's happened to us in the past. And it's great, because if you are, you know, entering a dangerous situation, just for example, you want to know, you know, you don't want to be like, ooh, the sharp teeth, and oh, like the growling mouth, and oh, right, like you want to know there's like something about to pounce on you, and like the lion's going to chase you, right? So you need to know that. But then if that's ever happened, every time into the future, you're going to fill in details that might actually not be what's really happening in the present moment. So when you experience some of these sacred plant medicines, they shut that down temporarily. And what that allows is for you to suddenly basically see the world for a period of time without that predictive coding. So without overlays of all your past stories, all your past traumas, all of the things that you hold and project onto the present moment, that's gone. And so you get this opportunity then to experience the world completely differently, and just having that moment, right? And I call these medicines portals. They don't fix everything just because you take them or interact with them, but they can open those windows, open those doors, that then you're suddenly able to see people, relationships, the world, your life in with new eyes, right? With a new perspective. And then you can, with the right support, and this is a really important part, right? Again, it's not just the medicine itself, and it never has been, even with indigenous communities and all the way back, this has always been a supported process, a ceremony that has preparation in advance, sometimes for weeks, support during and support after. So in those cases, you can then take that perspective, that what you were able to see through that portal, and apply that to your life and change things, hopefully very much for the better.
That's incredible. You did very well. That was impressive. That was impressive. Yeah, because it really takes us in out of that survival mode, you know, like you're talking about, that we step into a room and our brain is hardwired, you know, to protect us, you know, from any threats. And there, in order to be able to do that, we need to create a separation. What is me and what is outside? And then interpret the outside. And we always look at threats because we're wired to survive. And now we are then given the opportunity to then step into and viewing things as they are, you know, as they are, you know, the realness, and then be able then to move out of that threat state. And can I activate part of the brain that is more more analytical and more kind of recognizing what really is taking place rather than living in that survival mode. And so just that alone is such a huge piece, because we know when we're in that survival mode, cortisol is secreted, we're in an inflammatory state, we can't become less insulin responsive, we can't transport sugar into the cells, the mitochondria then doesn't get the nutrients that it need. And so we have all of that takes place when we live in that survival mechanism. Doesn't mean that the survival mechanism is bad. It just needs that. We just need to balance that and not live in that all the time. Should be a moment, and then we should be able to experience the world as it is.
Absolutely. And you do exactly what you're saying is need that balance, right? It's not that you don't want to use all of the past wisdom and experience that you've had. It's not always bad. You just don't want to be, you don't want to be compromised by it, right? And so even on a cellular level, we can be in cell danger mode, or we can be in this regenerative, kind of optimal functioning. And what we want to do is make sure that cell danger mode is only turned on when it absolutely needs to be. And then it turns off again until it's needed again.
Yeah, that's perfect. So a lot of people, when they hear the word psychedelic, they think of stoners and they think of people that are not very high functioning and want to escape the world. But in reality, from what I'm hearing, you're actually then stepping into the world more by incorporating psychedelics, these plant medicines into your world.
Yeah, I want to say something because people do think about psychedelics as drugs, right? And I think, I always used to joke when I was talking about the dirt cure, people would say, what's the difference between like a germ and a microbe? And it's just, germ is just a pejorative term for a microbe, right? It's all in how you interact with it. Similarly, with psychedelics, what's the difference between a medicine and a drug? A drug, right? It's all in how you engage, right? A drug is a pejorative term potentially for a medicine. And almost every drug out there was originally a very sacred plant that was revered, in fact, for a very, very long time. And I could talk about the coca plant, right? Which obviously we know has had a real negative impact because of how it was purified and used and so on. Similar stories would come from like the poppy plant, right? That's what, led to opioids, right? Which have become a terrible problem, but it's not necessarily the fault of the plant, right? I've engaged with, for example, the coca leaf is used in altitude. I was in Ecuador and they gave me a coca leaf to chew on because I had altitude sickness. Many of us did when we were at very, very high altitude and my heart was beating and racing and I was nauseated and I was lightheaded, chewed the coca leaf for 1 minute and I felt completely fine, but not altered, just like my altitude sickness was gone, right? So I do think it's very important to consider, again, your relationship with the medicine, because on the one hand, these are absolutely medicines, and we can talk about the studies that are being published on depression, on eating disorders, on OCD, PTSD, addiction. It's a treatment, a very effective, maybe one of the most effective treatments for addiction, from nicotine and alcohol all the way to heroin. And, so very broad spectrum of very positive results for a lot of people when it's done appropriately. But of course, it can be like anything. People can use anything, as an escape. And I think that these medicines certainly could be used that way and have been used that way. So, and I think cannabis could, which is not a psychedelic, but could fall in that category too, that there are people who have engaged with it and found incredible healing and medicine. And there are people who probably engage with it in a not very respectful way, or maybe as an escape, which, is a different way of engaging. So I do think that, again, a lot of this has to do with coming in right relationship and thinking about the relationship as reciprocal. In other words, you're not going to these medicines, which are very powerful, you know, even if you're not ingesting or not, you know, having a big cannonballs and fireworks experience, which you don't have to have, but no matter what, you're coming to these medicines with a sense of respect and learning, taking what they have to offer you, whether you're macro dosing, whether you're micro dosing, whether you're quantum dosing, and then thinking, what is my responsibility here? Is my responsibility to keep coming and coming and coming again and again and saying, ooh, ooh, I want more, I want more? Or is it, how can I take these lessons and apply them in an important and meaningful way in my life and maybe even in the lives of others? Like, what am I being called to now? What is the message? What is the medicine of this plant guiding me to do, right?
So it's almost like you have to then step into this with a very specific intention. Otherwise, you know, because they are so powerful, and usually then if you don't come with an intention, then it can take you in whatever direction, and it will then have maybe not as good of an impact on you. And I like kind of how you see it. It's a reciprocal. I mean, you give and you receive. So it is important then to come with a giving, with the attitude, that the giving attitude, in order to be able to really fully experience the true effect of these plant medicines.
Absolutely. I think, you know, you said it very, very well. And I do think that, again, what happens with a lot of these medicines and what has happened with a lot of the medicines that we've talked about is that they're commoditized. And, you know, I don't like to always share this, but when I was in South America, they would talk about kind of the psychedelic tourists, right? Or the, right, they called them junkies. And I was sort of trying to get to the bottom of, you know, what they were talking about. And what they meant was not, you know, the way that we will use that word, let's say, in the United States, but more like, we would just take and take and take and take and take. We just want more of everything, right? And I thought that was a real, you know, it's always interesting to see your culture through the eyes of other cultures. It's sometimes very jarring, right? And you know, so the question is exactly that. Like, again, always going back to right relationship, reciprocity, coming with reverence and humility, and not just being in that taking.
So if you mentioned a number of different psychedelics, you know, cocoa, you know, and yeah, psilocybin. And so what would be kind of a safe step if a person wants to experience this kind of plant medicine? What would be a safe step for an individual to do that is not scary and they don't feel like they're going to lose control and go crazy, or, I mean, whatever perception an individual has in regards to psychedelic drugs, you know, what can they do to experience this in a positive way?
Well, so these medicines, and I'll just kind of touch on what some examples of psychedelics are. Coca is actually not coca, not cocoa, like chocolate, but coca, the coca plant, which is what was used to become cocaine, but in fact the coca plant is, you know, it is much, much more than that, and it doesn't actually get people high in that way when it's used in that, you know, in its original form.
That's an interesting part. So when it is in its original form, it comes with all these other cofactors that then makes the experience and quite different than in, you know, the refined form that we see, you know, with drug cartels and so forth.
Well, and that's true with every plant, whether we're talking about these more, you know, potent kinds of entheogenic or psychedelic plants, or even if we're talking about really any plant. And, you know, I am an herbalist, so I always believe that using the whole plant, with very few exceptions, is energetically and physiologically the best approach. So whether I'm talking about chamomile, or I'm talking about cannabis, or I'm talking about skullcap, or any of them, you know, when we purify them, that is when they become different. And they're not coming in the way with all of, as you said, not just cofactors, but thousands and thousands of different compounds that we think with our, you know, little young brains, right, in the evolutionary cycle, we think, ooh, like we're gonna make something better than what this plant is. And we do make something sometimes stronger by taking the strongest compound, but we're not always making something better because all of those other compounds and elements and, you know, we could say the spirit of the plant that's in the whole medicine works very differently than, right? And so that I think is a big piece. And the psychedelics themselves, like ayahuasca, San Pedro cactus, peyote, psilocybin mushrooms, LSD is actually technically a psychedelic. A lot of people now are seeing research coming out about MDMA, technically not a psychedelic, but it's called an empathogen and it is altering. And ketamine, also not technically a psychedelic, but is a dissociative. But all of these are kind of being lumped into this category. And you asked about how to interact with them. So I will say that many of these are now being decriminalized. So previously they were illegal, and that actually is probably going to change within the next year or two. We already have decriminalized in a lot of places in the United States alone, like Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Oakland, Denver, the state of Oregon. So we're seeing actually even Connecticut, I think, is going to be opening many, many clinics. So we're seeing this, I think, even much more quickly than cannabis changed. We're seeing psychedelics are being decriminalized or made more accessible. And I think on a federal level, the current administration actually just said within 2 years, they want to make this accessible. So we are seeing that change, but people do need to know that if you go and engage with certain kinds of these medicines outside of a clinical study, you, other than ketamine, you right now, depending on where you are, it could be considered illegal. So that's just important to know. You want to know that you're in a place where it is at least decriminalized. There are ways to engage without worrying about that. So we have something that is made with in the presence of the medicine with ceremony, but is not illegal and doesn't have any psychedelic activity. So you're not gonna like trip or hallucinate. It can help people to see things differently and journey. And it does open that portal and build that relationship with the plant, which then you may eventually decide down the road, I do wanna engage. So we do have these, they're called quantum drops, and they are a way that people can engage safely and legally. And for people who are nervous, or who even for people who want to integrate an experience they already had, or want to prepare for an experience, or who take medications and maybe couldn't engage with these medicines, that is a way that they can engage.
So the quantum drops, what do they contain? Or do they contain any one of these plants then, or a mixture of them, or how, what are they for people that I'm sure they're curious?
Yeah, they're vibrational products. So part of how I work with these medicines is I grow them, but not for my own consumption. So they are like my teachers, and part of my offering, right? My reciprocal offering, was that I mean, it's funny stories about how these all came into my possession, in fact, because it wasn't like I was just looking to like have a forest of, you know, San Pedro cacti or something, but I do have many of these plants. And again, I don't ingest them, I take care of them. And so I actually, at particular times of month or year, like very particular times, like equinox, for example, things like that, we actually have a device that measures the music of the plants. It takes the vibration and frequency of the plants. And by putting it on the leaf or on the cactus and, you know, grounding it in the roots, and makes music. We do medicine songs and ceremony, and we have a container of liquid that becomes this vibrational product of this ceremony. So we are, you know, smudging, we have music, we have my medicine songs, stones, all of the different things that then go into this liquid, which, you know, I'm sure you are talking about in this series, you know, the way that water and fluids can hold energy. And then we make a medicine from that. And we even have our production facility. We found an amazing scientist who has a production facility where he plays the medicine songs and has an altar while our products are being bottled. So it's very, very special. And we've worked with it now with a lot of people because, I mean, you know, we want to know that it's actually going to help people. And it's been very, very profound and beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's so incredible. I mean, the majority of our bodies, we consist of water. And so obviously, like you mentioned, the water holding frequencies, and they've done studies, you know, showing that the intention and the energy, how that shifts the structure of the water. And then obviously the opposite, you know, your negative intention will really make it look ugly. And they've been able to take photos of these. And so it's really powerful, you know, by programming the fluid like that, you know, liquid that you will then ingest, and then that energy will then shift the structure within yourself. So that's really, really cool. So let's say an individual is in a state, you know, where things are legal. Let's say they're in Oregon or they're Denver, and or they're wanting to go to that location in order to be able to experience something. How should one go about doing that? Is that a safe thing to do? I know there are a number of people doing like microdose. You talk about microdosing, macrodosing, quantum dosing. You know, tell me a little bit about that.
So I do consult with people and coach people through these kinds of experiences, because I do think it's very important to have people. I mean, whether they're credentialed, you don't have to necessarily have an MD, although I do, but people who are credentialed and really understand a lot about these medicines and how to find safe environments and safe medicines, right? Because anything could be anything, right? And we really don't always know. So a lot of things have been happening underground for a long time. And, you know, I think it's really important to have some kind of verifiability. But people also, I think, are finding through word of mouth as well. I think, you know, this isn't, in my mind, something you just want to kind of, right? Like, I think a lot of people might have had their first experience with this, like, you know, as a kid at the younger generations at raves, or the older generations, you know, in kind of their parents' basement when they were going through their hippie phase or whatever it is. But I think, you know, from the standpoint of really engaging with the medicine, you want to do it in a safe way. And I actually have resources, free resources that people can access through my website about how to safely engage with these medicines, how to find testing if they are, right? Because I'm not going to police how people are engaging. I want to make sure that people are safe and doing this in the safest and most held and most positive way possible.
And so what would be then the benefit of like microdosing? You're talking about, you know, all the health benefits. You know, can you achieve these health benefits through microdosing as well?
Microdosing is most commonly done right now with psilocybin, which is the, you know, magic mushroom. One of the key points about microdosing is it doesn't alter you in a way that you feel like you're seeing things differently, or that your perception of reality is shifted to the point that you can't operate. So people can microdose and go to work, drive a car, take care of their kids, right? And I think that's a real benefit for a lot of people who don't feel like they can engage with this sort of macro dose experience where they're going to be incredibly altered. For some people, that's what they feel called to. But for a lot of people, they want to see if they can experience benefits without necessarily having to, you know, take a break from being, you know, in their lives. And so microdosing offers that. And yes, it's absolutely effective. More and more, we're seeing studies. It's a little harder to study in an academic setting because they like to have things that have a very specific beginning and end in a controlled setting. So going, you know, doing a journey with a medicine, it's like X number of hours, you're there, you take the medicine, you're not leaving with the medicine, right? You're not, there's not other altering factors. It's just, you're here beginning to end and they can control the whole thing. But we're seeing with microdosing that actually it seems like it's effective for autoimmunity, for chronic pain syndromes. So I've seen people with like long COVID, for example, or vaccine injury, recover really beautifully with microdosing. Chronic pain like cluster headaches or migraines or trigeminal neuralgia. So really difficult to treat conditions. And then anxiety, depression. We've absolutely just seen really profound benefits even with these very tiny doses that do, in this case, contain the actual plant material, right, or mushroom material, which is different than the quantum dosing. So it's very, very profound. And no, you don't have to have, like I said, you know, that whole tremendously altering experience. And you know what we do see also is that the benefit, you can see the benefit for days after even one microdose. So it's not just the day that they will take the microdose, but then for days after that, they're still experiencing the benefits. People also say they just find it very easy to not smoke or not drink or not, or easier to like exercise or take good care of themselves. So there's the studies that have been done, you know, people, a lot of them are just descriptive, like what has your experience been? And they've published really, really profound shifts where people just feel like kind of more of a sense of self-love and more of an ability to just take good care of themselves, which is like, yes, please. You know what I mean?
More of that. Yeah, and that's kind of the image you have. You have actually the opposite image when you think of psychedelics than you have. You have kind of that stoner image. I mean, and so then you're thinking of people that are less able to take care of themselves, less drive to change their habits, you know, that are conducive to better living. So for an individual that, let's say they want to have, you know, they can't break the sugar habit, you know, then this would be a powerful tool then to use. In addition to then obviously how they view themselves as an individual, because a lot of times, you know, working on your weight and having challenge with that has a lot to do with self-image and, you know, past experiences, but then also just the addiction of the food in itself. So this would be a powerful tool to help to break that cycle, it sounds like.
Yeah, it absolutely can be. Yes.
And also I was thinking for like executives that are wanting to function on a higher level where you're wanting to be able to consider more options as solutions and have your brain functioning on an optimum level. I mean, to bring something like this would be really powerful.
Yeah. So one of the things that these medicines do is they create connections where there weren't connections before. Right. And so it's neuroplasticity plus, right? Plus, plus. And I work with a lot of CEOs and creatives and entrepreneurs to coach them through these kinds of experiences, because microdosing experiences to help them kind of access those shifts so that they can just sort of walk into problem solving and seeing where they need to shift or change or where they want to go next with more ease. And this is not just, I mean, it's obviously physiologic, but it's also, right, going back to that idea of the energy of the plants or the spirit of the plants are kind of, right, if you're coming in a good way, then you can feel guided.
And then we have, I mean, we talked about the quantum dosing, which is, you know, the quantum drops where you hold kind of the energy of the plant without actually ingesting the plant in itself. But then you have the macro dosing, which is what you were talking about, where people come for a specific moment and they have the experience and then they leave without the plant, but the experience still persists. So what should a person expect out of that kind of an experience? What can happen, and how should they be different after, or how can they be different after that type of an experience?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that, because I think, you know, there's a lot of sort of stigma and story around this idea of having a bad trip, right? And that kind of goes back to people when they were engaging with these medicines and maybe not coming in a very reverent way or in a very held way, right? Not getting that preparation before, during, and after. And I'll say the idea of a bad trip being something that might be an unpleasant experience is not necessarily unusual. In the sense that, right, if you think about this idea of the default mode network that we talked about earlier being responsible for your ego, right, for what makes you feel like you, a lot of what we talk about in terms of psychedelics is ego death, meaning, and this is a very ancient idea and, you know, has been around a very long time. You don't need a psychedelic to have an ego death. There are a lot of other ways that can happen, like, you know, getting a diagnosis of a big illness can be a kind of ego death, a marriage ending, or changing a career, loss of any number of things, right? Can do that, right? It can shift you, can kind of make you feel like you are not the same person that you were before. But we all know that is typically, not always, but typically difficult. It's unpleasant in the moment, right? Until we kind of are reborn into that new identity, it feels very uncomfortable. For many people, some people can go into these experiences and have these journeys or trips or whatever you want to call them, and it can be very beautiful and very pleasant and very wonderful. And also, some people can go into those experiences and have very difficult, very frightening experiences that can feel traumatic, even just the experience itself. And although the medicine is doing what the medicine needs to do, it can be so difficult for some people that they feel that macrodose experience can be, you know, a very bad and difficult memory. And there's really no way to 100% know in advance what kind of experience you're going to have, no matter how much you try to prepare. You just want to know that you're going to be with people, a sitter or a, you know, whether you're in a study, whether you're with a therapist, whatever it may be, that will be able to guide you and hold you and keep you safe and help you feel safe as possible during the experience. But the fact that it would be difficult doesn't mean that the medicine's not doing what the medicine is supposed to do. What can happen on the other side of that, though, is just with one dose, one of those kinds of experiences, right? You know, you can... People have been able to walk away not feeling a sense of depression after they've tried everything that is available for depression. They can walk away just after one experience feeling like they're not that depressed person anymore that they were. Does it mean that everything's perfect for them, et cetera, that they don't need support after that? Not necessarily, but that intractable depression, that stuckness, that can be gone. PTSD, similarly, you know, and there are studies now coming out with MDMA. I have a program that I teach all of the science, all of the studies, all of the newest literature and, you know, ways to engage. But, you know, PTSD, eating disorders, which are so difficult to treat in our conventional system, one dose, this is being explored. Even people who have terminal cancer and feel tremendous, terrible anxiety and depression about the idea of dying, which, I mean, you know, obviously is not strange or unusual, but they can go and have these kinds of experiences actually NYU is one of the places where they do these academic trials, and many people come out feeling like at peace about this next transition. So, you know, what these medicines are able to do doesn't always feel good, right, in the process. It may or it may not, especially with the macrodose experience, but there is that surrender, there is that kind of shift of identity, and there is that ability to become, as you might say, unstuck from wherever you may have been, maybe for decades, maybe for your whole life.
And it's, and I actually interviewed on one of my podcasts, the Integrative Cancer Solutions. I interviewed a gentleman with cancer that had gone to NYU for that experience. You know, he's a medical doctor. And he said that that was the best thing. I mean, before he had tremendous fear of dying, leaving his family, you know, severe anxiety. And then after that experience, he was at peace with everything. His cancer was doing better. I mean, it's amazing when you shift out of that anxiety mode, survival mode, you know, how that impacts immune system and how you then deal with something as stark as a cancer diagnosis. So one of the things, yeah, you talked about the loss of self, the loss of the, I wouldn't say loss of self, loss of ego, you know, and obviously we hold on to views of ourselves and we have experiences, traumas, all these different things that we build into the ego. And to be able to have something, you know, like a macrodosing experience, to be able to peel off that aspect so that you can see yourself in a much more true way. Even though obviously when you are, you get to see yourself, you get to see that ego and get to see kind of the scary things along with that, it becomes, I mean, to me, that becomes a really powerful tool to really excel you or accelerate you into being who you truly want to be.
Yeah, I think very much so. And I like that idea, right? Again, that accelerating, or like, oh, it's opening a door or window that might have previously been closed. You still have to engage, right? Afterwards, it doesn't all just change for you. But, you know, the disclaimer there also is that then you may need to change your life, right? And one of the things that I think it kind of, you know, to the point of being unstuck, right? It involves making sometimes decisions that, you know, moving or changing a job or changing a relationship or, you know, things that were okay for you or tolerable for you before may no longer feel tolerable. And that is a way that you're kind of getting nudged to be more true to yourself, right? One of the reasons we do get stuck very often is not just because of things that happened to us in the past, but the way that we live into those things every single day of our lives. So, you know, it's very profound. It's very beautiful. It certainly happened to me in my own experience as well. I mean, you know, if you want to ask why a neurologist has become really like, you know, a medicine woman and you know, teaching people about, you know, plants and relationship and terrain and all of these things. But it is easier to do those things because you see them, and you know, maybe before you couldn't really see it.
And I would think that as a neurologist, if you step outside of the box of the medical box, then recognizing that the neural development that takes place utilizing these type of medicines. It's just so much more than you can do pharmaceutically.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pharmaceutical industry, believe me, is very excited to get their hands on these medicines. And in fact, you know, they're saying, oh, well, we'll make a drug where you won't have the psychedelic experience, you know, ayahuasca without the vomiting and you know, hallucinations. Like, this will be a designer drug, kind of. And it remains to be seen. You know, we've run into this problem, as we've discussed before, when we don't kind of know what we're getting ourselves into. But absolutely, these plants are very wise, they're very powerful, and they have really profound lessons and medicine to bring to us if we come in the right way.
And they have evolved over time, you know, meaning that they are at this spot where they're at with their chemical constituents and their energetic frequency based upon all the thousands of years that they have been in existence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to say, just, you know, before we close, that not everyone should be running to take these medicines necessarily. And not every medicine is for everyone either. So for one person, there might be one particular plant or medicine that really calls to them, versus another person versus, and this is part of why the quantum drops are, I think, going to be helpful to people, is for them to see what they're drawn to and what opens things up for them the most, working with them on a quantum level, so that then should they still feel called to go to, you know, a stronger microdose, macrodose, what have you, they might know what direction to go in, because as these become decriminalized or legalized and they're available, you know, it's not like, it's not just a free for all, right? You want to go to, for most of us anyway, we want to go to the medicine that's going to really be the one that's appropriate and right and most healing and productive for us, rather than having to, right, try everything out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so how do people, where can they go then to learn about these things? I mean, I know you mentioned that you teach a lot of classes, and also these quantum drops, are they available for the public? Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have free resources on my website at drmaya.com, drmaya.com. We will give you a link that people can go straight to some of those free resources. So, you know, they can explore that and see, you know, if there's anything, just so they can familiarize themselves. I do have a course as well that's for anybody, that they can learn the basics about actually medicinal mushrooms and psychedelics, so that they can just feel like a little fluency, and, you know, if they're interested. And then I have a bigger course, a bigger training program for professionals who want to do psychedelic integration coaching. And that we do once a year. So people can get on the wait list for that. And then when we open registration, we let them know. And the quantum drops are also available as well on my website.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Shetreat, it's always a pleasure to kind of just be part of your incredible wisdom and the knowledge that you bring to the world with, and the energy that these plants represent is such powerful medicine. So thank you so much for bringing this to the public.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.